Welcome to episode 9 of In the Pen. I am your host, Callan Elslinger, joined as always by Rick Graham. Rick, how you doing today?
Good. I'm excited for, we don't talk about a lot of other sports, but, Celtics game tonight, game 1, Eastern Conference Finals. Excited for that, as well as, some more baseball, as my Red Sox are down 9-1 right now in the second inning.
Yeah, in my non-baseball news, the Rangers pulled off a 3-1 deficit and were able to win 3 straight to beat the Penguins, so I'm excited about that. And the Yankees are one of the best teams in baseball right now, so life's pretty good for me. I can't really complain. I know you are at least got one, so that's a good start. We'll keep the bad theme going is on today. Before we get into our main topic, we're going to dive into some of the closers who have been struggling as of late, including my unfortunate Aroldis Chapman and a few other closers who had a rough week. We won't do as much of our committee search because there wasn't as much of developments in this that week. So we'll just go into some of the struggling closers. Then we're going to dive into some pitchers who have had defined pitch use changes, who are really standing out. Rick did a great job putting together a bunch of those on our notes and in his article this week. So we're going to dive into some of those guys, some of the big name closers, and go into some of the under the radar middle relief setup type guys who are worth monitoring because of his trend as well. So, but as we always do, we're going to start off with what we're calling up three up, three down. Just our risers and fallers, but figured a little baseball theme. So, Rick, three up. Who are, it doesn't have to be three, but let's go. Let's say that. Who's rising up in your rankings this week?
Yeah, I had nothing. No one really made, there wasn't any major changes, and no one really went flying up the list this week. But David Bednar, I think, is a notable one. Just continuing to, be that shutdown closer for Pittsburgh. He's going to be their all. I mean, right now he's probably their all-star, candidate for the all-star game. He's their arguably their best pitcher, maybe player right now. I mean, Chris Stratton's fallen out of the picture. So it's like Bednar is the closer there. It's with a Pirates reliever closer. They may not win a game every week. So you might not always get, a ton of value from him, but he's not going to hurt you. He's going to add strikeouts. I'm really excited for him. Notable down the end of the list, I put Paul Sewald up a little bit just because he's still, I feel he's in another tier compared to Diego Castillo and certainly Drew Steckenrider. And they're still playing games with all three of them, I think, may have had saves in the last week or so. But Sewald's clearly the best reliever there for now. And I feel like he may, at some point, maybe they just pick a guy like him and go with it. I mean, if not, he's going to get you, good ratios, Ks, and, a save or two here and there. I guess Hansel Robles would be the third one just because we got at least some sort of idea for who the Red Sox would turn to in the ninth inning, and he converted his second save Monday night. I'm not overly excited about that, but he's a closer on a team that is better than what they've shown so far. So,
Are they? No. As a Yankee fan, yeah.
I as Nathan Eovaldi allows 5 home runs in the second inning tonight. but yeah, Robles is just really not exciting, but he is a closer. So, if you're in a league where it's really hard to find saves, a deeper roto league, then I guess Robles has to be on your radar now.
Is he the favorite now in Boston, or is it still shrug the shoulders, or would you be putting him ahead of Diekman and how you'd prioritize Boston relievers? Or
yeah, it's definitely ahead of Diekman at this point. He's a favorite there. I don't think anyone's really shown that they're gonna contest him. Matt Strom's been pretty good this year. I feel like he deserves a chance maybe, but that's, again, not something to get overly excited about, but I feel like, he's kind of deserved at least a chance. So if something happens with Robles, then I think Strom might be the next guy, but they really need help somewhere else.
it's worth noting for this series too, when you mentioned Diego Castillo and Paul Sewald, Drew Steckenrider was placed on the restricted list prior to their game in Toronto this series. We don't have to go into why, but if he's going to be unavailable, that makes a much easier path for saves for someone like Sewald or for Castillo. So if you need someone for just this series, if you want to play the hot hand, go out and get one of those two Seattle relievers. They could make a difference this week. Hopefully they're able to get at least one when that three or four head monster is now one head less.
Yeah, I and Castillo too. He's had a bit of a rough start, but I notice he's got the highest BABIP in baseball right now among relievers. I think it's at 450. So he's had some bad luck, but you know, we've seen Diego Castillo be pretty consistent, and pretty good in this league for the past few years. So wouldn't be too concerned about his slow start. So yeah, either one of those two this weekend make for a pretty good dart throw.
Yeah, and Bednar, we've been hyping up all season, so continue to go get him. I would agree with you. Chris Stratton's kind of fading away, and Bednar is the favorite for saves for however long this lasts until maybe the trade deadline, but we're still far away from that, where that's nowhere near anyone's mindset right now. But as always, as you go from three up, three people got to go down. So who has moved down in your ranks in the past week?
Yeah, it's a little bit, I would say minimal, but Liam Hendricks, I bumped him down a little bit this week because, it's been ongoing. It hasn't been, I thought May would have been where he turned the corner here, but yeah, I don't want to say it's starting to concern me, but it's not great. It's not what you, when you put that sort of draft capital into, drafting him on your, in your draft day, you were hoping to get, kind of that's him and Josh Hader were like one and two, they're, nothing to worry about, locked in, just getting saves, low ratios, bunch of Ks. So yeah, it's a concern. He's, age is a thing. He's had some back issues. But I will say he had a really good outing yesterday or Monday night of this week. Looked good. He threw 50% fastballs, 50% breaking balls, which is, I think, where he kind of has to start trending towards. And we'll get more into that a little bit later with, talking about pitch usage changes. But yeah, overall, not concerned with him. Definitely not concerned with him as far as this next guy goes, with Mark Melancon, who I think is probably at this stage done. He's had a good run. I mean, I looked it up today. It's crazy that he is fourth in saves from 2011 to 2021. He was fourth in baseball in saves. So, I mean, he's had a great career, especially considering he's not he's not the guys that were in front of him, Aroldis Chapman, Craig Kimbrell, guys who throw upper 90s and get huge strikeout numbers. Melancon's just doing it, getting ground balls and limiting hard contact. But his stuff's down this year. They're going to reevaluate the position. It could be the end of the road for him. And Joan Duran moved down a little bit because this is just the committee problem. The committee factor here is still concerning. And, over the last week, Pagan and Tyler Duffy earned saves, and Duran didn't. And he pitched the prior day where Pagan got his save, so he wasn't available. But I just feel like this, not positive, but it could turn into a three-headed committee, kind of like, what Seattle's doing. And that would be unfortunate considering the potential upside you could have gotten in Duran if he were the closer there.
How much did it pain you to drop Duran? We all know that you may be one of the biggest Duran troopers easily on our staff, let alone in the fantasy baseball industry. But how much did that pain you to lower him?
It did. I mean, I just want to see a week where he just takes over. I mean, to be fair, Duffy and Pagan haven't pitched bad. I guess they don't deserve to just be exiled and not have a chance here. But I mean, anyone who's seen Duran pitch, it's you want to watch this guy finish off games and, get the last three outs. as a fan more than anything.
Yeah, Hendricks, there's not much action we're going to be able to take with him. It's been up and down, but there's no one to... who's going to be next? We just... You said you're not too worried, so you're holding Hendricks. If you're rostering him, you're not trying to sell on name value now. You still buy that he could be that top two reliever, or would you try trading him off now because of that?
I would try trading for him right now, I think. I think he's one of those buy low... the type of guy that has a rough, you know, start to the season that typically turns it around. And if you have some manager in your league who's really, you know, upset, or, you know, the type of manager who takes the first month as, like, you know, the end all be all of what that player is going to be for that season, then I think you try to, you know, make an offer there, try to get him before he turns things around. Kendall Graveman got lit up the other night. I don't think Hendricks has got much competition there.
And finally, Mark Melanson, are you just dropping him now? And if so, who's the next guy in Arizona? Do you pick up the next guy, or is it just avoid full on Arizona right now?
Yeah, Ian Kennedy's probably the next guy. I think I mentioned it like last week that if there's some sort of committee, if there's some sort of like debate between Ian Kennedy and Mark Melanson, then I don't want anything to do with either one of them particularly, because neither one of them brings enough upside to really justify, you know, putting them in a lineup for a week, and maybe they get a save, but they're not going to give you anything else. And I think outside of like 16 team roto leagues, I'm probably not even looking here. And it's even outside of Kennedy, there's really not a lot to get excited about with their bullpen. So yeah, probably a situation I'd just avoiding outside of, you know, really deep leagues.
Yeah. So for our sake, please just anoint Kennedy the closer, so we don't have to worry about another committee, and my 15 team shares of Ian Kennedy can be worthwhile right now. But we're going to move over to some of the news. Like we mentioned, there's not much in terms of injuries or things like that. We're not going to dive into the committees this week. We're going to take a look at some of these struggling closers of the past week, and we highlighted him earlier, so we're just going to do brief if we'd missed anything. But Liam Hendricks, is there anything that we didn't discuss with regards to him, anything that you're noticing outside of the injury that's concerning? I know you said you want to buy low on him right now. Is there anything much more you want to say other than what we said earlier?
Not really. I think the basic skill set that he's had for the last few years looks the same, and Velo's fine. Command's a little bit, you know, that's a bit of an issue. Again, another high BABIP guy. He's BABIP sitting at 375 right now. I think, you know, it just comes down to he might have to make a bit of an adjustment here. And like a lot of these, not a lot, like, you know, a good amount of these closers on this list who have made adjustments this year and going more to their secondary stuff instead of just relying on their fastball. I think, especially as you age, and we have very similar birth dates. We're both, you know, 33. He's getting up there. And even though the fastball velocity is still there, it's still, you still got to, you know, start working in more of those secondary offerings. And I feel like his curveball, slider are both good pitches, so it shouldn't be an issue for him. I'm sure they'll make the right adjustment.
Yeah, just taking a quick look at his Savant, everything looks pretty similar. The one thing that kind of stands out to me, besides the drop, his K percentage has dropped over 6% since last year. Swing percentage is down almost 11%. So teams are being a lot more patient when it comes to him. So those pitches out of the zones he was getting Ks on are starting to be spit on a little bit more. It's not really a major adjustment. It's probably just a little small thing he'll have to fix. I don't think this is a concern from him. That's the one thing I'm at least seeing on a very quick glance from him that's not even concerning, but maybe can be attributable as people are just being a little bit more patient with him and taking some more of those off-speed pitches. So he's a smart pitcher. He'll make those adjustments. It's not something I'm really that concerned about too long-term. But one pitcher who, as a Yankee fan, I'm definitely getting concerned about, and it continues to concern me. You weren't too high on him earlier in the year, but Aroldis Chapman, just He continues to struggle. He came in a non-save situation the other day against Baltimore, gave up a home run to Anthony Santander. He took the loss against Chicago earlier in the week. Command's always been an issue, and it continues to be an issue this year. Try and talk me off the ledge if you can about Aroldis Chapman, but I'm fully just, I'm getting done with him, even though I just picked him up in Guillotine.
I feel like this is just kind of who he is now. It's just, there's going to be really good weeks, really bad weeks, and you just have to, as a Yankee fan or as, you know, someone who's rostering him for fantasy purposes, you just kind of have to live with it, and you know it going in, and, you know, I'm not, until he starts piling up, you know, back-to-back bad weeks or, you know, a whole month, then I start, you know, getting concerned. But I guess it's, yeah, there's just a lot of inconsistency, and he's a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde act right now. And I think this is carrying over from last year. And again, someone whose stuff's not what it used to be. He used to just be able to rely on throwing 101 and, you know, getting away with it. And now he's got to be more of a, you know, he's got to locate more, and he's got to use the secondaries a little bit more. It's you know, it's been a little bit of a rough transition, but I think at the end of the day, you're mostly going to get more good than bad from him. And I think the Yankees are going to have, you know, I don't think they're going to turn away from him anytime soon, unless, like I said, he has like back-to-back weeks where he's just coughing up leads. But yeah, it's frustrating, but I'm not ready to really drop him yet, especially given how, you know, pretty, he's got a stranglehold on the closer role right now, and I don't think that's going away.
And so that answers the next question I was considering about asking: is there anyone in the Yankees bullpen you want to stash at this point for saves? Or are you still just holding on to? Obviously, you're not dropping Chapman, but there's anybody you want to stash, or just there's better uses of stashes than Chapman's replacement right now?
Probably better. I think there's better uses, but I'm kind of curious. I mean, I like Clay Holmes a lot.
Yep.
I'm not sure if he doesn't have the swing and miss stuff that some of the other guys do in that bullpen, but like the ground ball rate combined with, you know, the slider whiff ability is very intriguing. Who would you say in the Yankees bullpen you watch them?
I think it is Clay Holmes. He seems to be the guy that Boone's going to, not even the fireman role, but as the eighth inning guy right before Chapman. Loaiza's coming in a lot earlier. I think Holmes is the direct guy to get to Chapman at this point. So Holmes came in yesterday, the other day, in a couple run game after Chapman was unavailable. So I think that Holmes would be the next guy. He might not have the strikeout stuff, but he got some saves earlier in the season when Chapman was unavailable. So I do think that Clay Holmes is now the next man up there. Obviously, they have a lot of guys, so it's a concern. Mm-hmm. But if I had to put money on one, it would be Clay Holmes.
Yeah, I think that's the right move for him if it does come down to that too. He's a bit different than, like, Chapman's like the big all or nothing strikeout guy and lets up some home runs, where Holmes is like the, you know, sinker slider, get weak contact, get a bunch of ground balls, you know, he gets some swings and misses. I'm not going to downplay it, but like, yeah, it'll be an interesting transition from those two.
And another guy who, not at the same level of Chapman, but after highlighting him last week, has gone through some struggles. It's Daniel Bard. Last week, he only went 2 1/3 innings, but gave up 5 runs over the past 2 1/3 innings. I know you highlighted him last week. You talked about all the good things that come with Daniel Bard. Are we retracting those, or is this not really much of a concern right now?
Well, it's a bit. I mean, it wasn't like this was totally unexpected, because it's just, I feel like this just comes with the territory being the Rockies closer. It's, and I know one of these blown saves was a road game, so I can't blame it all on Coors and whatnot. But yeah, it's kind of like, you know, in a different way, it's like Chapman, where you're going to get good Bard, you're going to get bad Bard. And it's been this, what he's been this season. It's been, you know, I think 2 or 3 bad weeks, and the rest has been good. So, you know, over the long run, it mostly evens out and he gives you a productive season. But, you know, weekly leagues and head-to-head leagues, it's obviously frustrating when, you know, he puts up a week like he did last week and it's just a net negative.
The Rockies just don't have anybody to me that they can turn to. I know they signed Alex Colome, but Bud Black is barely, he's used him in just middle relief, not too high pressure situations of late. So as much as, you know, you'd like to think about who might come next, it's just, I really think they don't have the options. They have to stick with Daniel Bard.
I think Colome's fallen out of the picture. If they do look to make a change, Tyler Kinley's been pretty good this year. Could be a sneaky, you know, deep league watch, you know, right now, because he's probably between swing and miss stuff and just not, you know, Robert Stevenson has swing and miss stuff, but he lets up a ton of home runs, where Kinley really kind of was able to restrict that while, you know, being productive and getting some strikeouts. So I think Kinley would be the next in line there.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't come to that, because Bard has been, it's always a fun story when Daniel Bard is pitching well, and he really has a season. But the last reliever that I want to talk about for this portion of the show, it's Jordan Romano. He's currently day-to-day with an illness. We saw him blow that save to the Yankees earlier last week with the walk-off home run to Aaron Judge. It's day-to-day. It's an illness, but he has had some struggles at times. You look at the Statcast page, and it's pretty ugly. He's getting hit very hard, and, you know, he's kind of getting a little bit lucky of late. You know, he's got 12 saves, which is great, but do you have some concerns with the underlying stuff of Jordan Romano, and now with this day-to-day tag coming along with him?
The day-to-day thing, well, if as long as it's just an illness, non-COVID related, I'm not too worried about it. But like you said, that Yankees game, his velo was down a little bit, and he was able to bounce back in his next outing, so that was obviously good to see. I think it was 2 weeks ago, I mentioned in my article that, like, now I would, like, as he's leading the league in saves, like, his Statcast profile isn't exactly, you know, something to get too excited about. So I thought, you know, now might be the time to sell high on him. And if you still can, I'd say go for it. Don't just give him away. But I'm concerned with, you know, he's had a history of health issues. He's been, like, his usage the first month of the season was much higher than it really has been at any point in his career for a month. There's definitely some warning signs here. And, you know, the Blue Jays don't have a lot to turn to. You know, Yimi Garcia's really been struggling lately. Simber's been up and down, and I don't know if he's really a closer. So he's going to have a shot, and as long as he's healthy and not sick and available, he'll be the closer. But yeah, I'm a little concerned for the long term with him.
And like we talked about at the beginning of the show, you try to pick up a Seattle reliever because of stacking RB on the restricted list. Do you pick up either Garcia or Simba right now and maybe grab a save while he's day to day, or is that too much overthinking of it?
If you're in, like, a, you know, if you're daily transactions league and a weekly head to head or something, and you want to try to get, you know, a save from one of them, I guess you could try Yimi Garcia. I would imagine he gets the first chance with him being day to day, just because of, you know, his history as being a closer. But I don't think it's, it depends on what you're like. If you have a spot open, or if you're dropping, you know, a streaming starter or something, maybe, but I wouldn't go dropping anything important, obviously.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to dive into some notable pitchers who have had massive pitch mix changes, which has led to a lot of success this season, making them very worth mentioning and monitoring as the season goes on. But we'll get those guys when we get back on the In the Pen podcast. And we're back here on the In the Pen podcast. This is I am Callan, joined with Rick. We're going to dive into some pitchers with notable pitch use changes over this year. And the first one we want to talk about is a pitcher that Rick has been pretty high on in the past few years going into the 2021 season. He had him as his number one reliever in all of fantasy baseball. And now he's getting him right back into his top three and has noticed some very positive trends for him. And we don't talk about him a lot because he's very dominant, but he's worth mentioning here. That is Edwin Diaz. Rick, what have you seen from Diaz this year that has you so excited?
I think, one of the things with, and it's a big trend in all of baseball, not just at the MLB level, but like at every level, you're seeing it more and more. And, you know, off speed, breaking ball usage is way up as, you know, hitters are just, you know, it's speaking as from being a hitter and when I played that, like, you know, you tend to want to sit on a fastball. It's easier to, you know, to time up and predict and to hit. So, you know, slider usage has gone way up this year, and Edwin Diaz has made a huge change. I didn't realize how much he's changed his repertoire so far. So last season he was at 61% with his fastball, 38% with his slider, and he's flipped that this year to 53% with the slider and 47% with the fastball. So now his slider is his primary pitch. And you know, especially with someone like Diaz, I might be like, maybe the walk rate's gonna go up if he does something like this. But you know, the walk rate's steady; it's still under 10%, which is, as long as he's under 10% with that, and he's got this like 50-50 near, you know, pitch mix. I mean, he's gonna be really hard to hit, and I think he's kind of putting himself into that Josh Hader territory with like this type of change, and you know, the Statcast profile and all the underlying stats have really backed that up.
And his walking music might be the most electric in baseball. I love seeing ghosts on Twitter and seeing walking. I would get so fired up if I was on that thing at those games, hearing him come in. It's just been an incredible season, and it's even sparked that debate back up again of did the Mets actually win that trade for him for Jared Kelenic. We'll find out in a few years, but I don't know. It's becoming more and more of a conversation with how things have turned out. But another reliever that was traded for prior to last season is Raisel Iglesias, and he has undergone a pretty similar transition in terms of his pitch usage. Rick, what have you seen from Iglesias that has you also moving him up ahead of Hendricks in your ranks?
Yeah, it's not as, I wouldn't say it's not as much as like Edwin Diaz, but he's throwing his slider more this year, and it's now his primary. He's throwing it more than any other pitch, so I'd say his slider is his new primary, and it's only up, you know, 4%, but you know, he's another one who I think there's not a lot of closers you just get like a good two pitch mix from. You know, some guys have three pitches that are, but like usually they only rely on two. But Iglesias is like the kind of rare, I guess, because he was a starting pitcher before that. You know, he's got three really good pitches in his fastball, slider, and changeup, and he's really been able to do a great job of, you know, mixing all three of them in and keeping hitters off balance. And I think it's the same goes for him now. It's interesting to see a slider go up even more on. Kind of take over as the primary, and his fastball is, you know, he's not using his fastball as much.
Yeah, he's been great, and we talked about that second tier of relievers earlier in draft season that we were trying to attack with him, Ryan Presley, Emmanuel Clase, and he's really emerged, and it's been a lot of fun to watch, especially with how good the Angels have actually been this year, where they're right in the top of that AL West, or right up there of Houston. So they're going to be right there. And that means a lot of saves for Iglesias. I think, you know, he's justifying that big payday that the Angels gave him this offseason.
For sure.
So outside of those guys, who are some other closers before we get into some of the other names to keep an eye on that have impressed you in terms of that? We kind of mentioned them over the shows, but let's, you know, highlight some other guys who have had some interesting pitch changes this year.
Yeah, I think I hadn't really realized this until I was looking at it yesterday, and Giovanni Gallegos has gone through kind of a similar change to, you know, he was 53, basically 53% fastball last year, and now this year he's, you know, 43% fastball, and he's throwing a slider 47% of the time. So dropping the fastball, and he's throwing his changeup 5% more this year, which is, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a third pitch, even if you're coming in for one inning. It's, you know, it's nice to have that changeup to get lefties out. And so far it's been okay for him. So yeah, Gallegos is an interesting one. David Robertson, I know he's on the COVID IL now. Hopefully he's back soon. But he's cut down. He threw his cutters 74% of the time last year, and that's down to closer to around 50%. And he's using his slider a lot more. And his slider isn't like your, you know, prototypical, like hard, you know, upper 80s slider. It's more of a slurvy 80. I think it comes in at 81 miles per hour around that. And, you know, that's been able to get him more swings and misses this year. We talked about Joe Barlow a little bit, throwing his sliders up nearly 15% this year, which is huge considering how hittable his fastball is. He's had trouble with, you know, letting up home runs with the fastball. Even though he struggled recently, you know, Daniel Bard's slider's up almost 9%. It's now his primary pitch as well. And I guess, yeah, Scott Barlow, the other Barlow, is throwing his slider and curveball combo 76% of the time, which is up 10% from last year. So, you know, a lot of interesting, at least I love to see, you know, you still need to have a good fastball to be a good late inning reliever, but it's, you know, the game's changed a lot and you have to be able to throw these secondaries for strikes. You have to be able to get ahead of hitters with these pitches and just really trust them in any count, in any situation. These guys have, you know, made some changes to do that.
Yeah, if you have the opportunity to go acquire any of these guys at this point, you go get it. I think Gallegos is especially worth mentioning because we went through that stretch about a week or two ago where Ryan Helsley was, we were talking about him as emerging in that pen with his metrics and how great he's been. But in the past 2 weeks, he's only been used twice. So I don't know if he's battling some sort of injury that's been undisclosed or if, you know, there's something else going on behind the scenes, but Gallegos has got multiple saves in that stretch. So I think any concern we had about Helsley eating into Gallegos' save opportunities has really jumped in. The same can kind of be said about Scott Barlow is, we were wondering if Staumont's been eating into his saves. Well, of late, it's pretty much been Scott Barlow, and that's about it. So I think any concern we had for those two guys, outside of, hey, look at these pitch usages, which are leading to success, here's managerial tendencies that are showing the same thing, that these guys are really starting to pull away from the leader, pull away from their competitors in terms of getting those saves.
Yeah, definitely two buy low opportunities right now, especially, you know, St. Louis hasn't had a ton of save chances, but they're a good team. They're going to, you know, Gallegos is going to have some really good weeks. So, you know, now might be the last really time, the last of his buy now window.
Yeah, and we'll transition this conversation. And before we do that, what does the pitch usage kind of show you about a pitcher? We know how good it is with these closers, but with some of the names we're going to talk about in a few minutes with the middle reliever setup guys, what does that change in pitch usage show you, or how does that impact how you evaluate a player?
I think it's always interesting for multiple reasons, but I like to see that. You know, even like Edwin Diaz and Rossiel Iglesias, like they, Gallegos too. I mean, they've been really good. They've been dominant relievers over the past couple of years. So sometimes you might think, why fix something if it's, you know, if it's not broken? But they're still trying to, you know, get better. They're still trying to improve, and you know, they're changing. So they're willing to make these changes to you know, see if it works out, and it's working, and you know, then more power to him. And I would say, you know, someone like David Robertson too, like coming back from, you know, kind of been out of the league for a while, had some injuries, and he's had to change how he, you know, works and how he pitches. And, you know, he probably didn't want to be like a, you know, throwing a slider this much, but, you know, here he is at his age, closing out games for the Cubs. So, you know, it's, every pitcher is different. You know, some guys, not everyone's like, you know, Josh Hader or early days, you know, Aroldis Chapman, where you can just throw your fastball and get away with it. So seeing these guys making these big changes is, it's always, you know, a positive to me, just seeing them willing to, you know, change things around to better their game.
So along those same lines, who are some under the radar relievers, either setting up for their teams or kind of in the middle relief role, who in your saves and holds league are worth monitoring, who are exhibiting similar usage changes or something in those trends are making them stand out to you and are worth monitoring or even picking up in your leagues.
I think when Daniel Port was on, he kind of, because he's a big Guardians fan, he brought up Trevor Stephan, and I hadn't really realized how good of a season he's having until he brought him up, and I'm like, oh wow, this is interesting. Let's see. And looking more into it, you see that he's throwing his splitter more than his slider, and he's really upped his splitter usage. And it doesn't always have to be a breaking ball that you start throwing more. It could be any off speed that just kind of translates into more success. And yeah, his splitter was pretty good the year before, and I think they found like, hey, maybe we just need to throw this more even against righties. You don't need to just save it for left-handed hitters. So he's had a lot of success with that this year, and he's kind of turning into Cleveland's number two in that bullpen, I think, the season he's having. Griffin Jacks was another interesting one with, like, kind of a failed start. I don't know if he was a failed starter, but, he transitioned into the bullpen this year, and he's throwing his slider about 50% of the time now, which, he wasn't doing as a starter. And he's really carved out a nice role in the Twins bullpen as a middle relief, kind of long relief option. He's got some holds on the air. I think he has a save, from a three-inning save. But, yeah, he's looked good. And, A.J. Puck was another interesting name. We talked about him a couple times here about being the potential Athletics closer down the road. And a guy who used to be able to rely on his fastball, he's now throwing his slider about 10% more, which is awesome. And he's had a very – he's off to a really good start this season. And I think – that's at least, there's something there for the Athletics fans to be excited about is, A.J. Puck and what he can turn out being either in the bullpen or as a starter eventually.
Yeah, I think those two names, Jax is going to be, if that stuff is, it's worth monitoring, but unfortunately with the committee in Minnesota, I don't want to see him fit more into that committee, but you never know. So he's worth monitoring, but especially with Trevor Stephan and A.J. Puck. Class A has been dominant as well, so he likely won't be losing the job anytime soon, but especially in holds leagues, so I think Stefan's definitely worth a look or even a pickup. And AJ Puck with Oakland, we've talked about Trevino's struggles throughout the past week or so. We've talked about Jimenez, how he's eating into this. Neither of them are exactly brand names. They're not the big name that's like, oh my gosh, they can't lose their jobs. So I think AJ Puck, we kind of talked about at the beginning of one of our first shows, was, hey, AJ Puck can maybe get some saves for Oakland. Let's see if that can come true. And especially if we're seeing these sort of signs, he's definitely worth putting on your watch list as we get further into the season. Do they make change? Do they trade people away to get Puck into that closer sort of role? So I'm putting a big fat circle around Puck's name and maybe not grabbing him yet because it's Oakland and I don't know how many holds he's going to get with that pen, but if something does happen, if another guy goes down or if the struggles continue, maybe you do take a little flyer on AJ Puck.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's like one thing, at least to be excited about. And Danny Jimenez has pitched well, and they got to ride that out until, either he sinks or swims there. But as long as he's throwing well, there's no reason to insert Puck. But I would love to see, Puck that kind of, I don't know, again, I'm sure there's Josh Hader comps, but, it'll be interesting to see what he could do as the full-time reliever and full-time closer there.
I'm just going for full selfish reasons. We said he can get saved, so let's get saved so we can add another checklist to us being right. But in all serious, and like especially with the lefty and the hair, you can get those comparisons. Oh, yeah. But in all seriousness, he has been great. He was a former high prospect, so there's definitely the chance that he eats into this. And you're right, Jimenez has been great. While Trevino is not, so maybe this isn't as big of a situation as we should be making, but I'm definitely monitoring Puck and want to see if he can eat more into this competition and it's definitely worth putting on your watch list and monitoring as these next few weeks progress. But while we're also watching out for AJ Puck, what are some other things, maybe not as closely, but what are some other things you want to keep an eye on in this next week to monitor and try and attack in terms of getting these saves. We've gotten forever into season, so it's getting to the point now where you want to be a bit more aggressive in terms of finding these saves. So what's one or two things you're keeping an eye on and trying to attack quickly if you notice some sort of a different trend through this team?
I guess, yeah, you just keep monitoring some of the situations we've talked about, like Minnesota. I guess I'll talk about two situations we haven't talked about. And the one that I'm most intrigued in is Miami, figuring out what happens there. Mm-hmm. It's been a quiet week for them, so we didn't really get much info to work off of other than Dylan Flora returned and got destroyed. So not great for him getting that job. So yeah, it's still up in the air there. And Cincinnati, I know it's not great, the situation there, but Lucas Sims back on the IL. So is Art Warren going to finally get a chance? Are they going to try like a new name like Alexis Diaz, or are they going to just be boring and put Hunter Strickland in the role if it comes down to it? So yeah, those two situations I'm kind of watching for this week.
Do you have a favorite in that Reds battle? If you had to put money or put your money where your mouth is for Reds saves, do you have one?
Diaz intrigues me, but I still am not ready to give up on Art Warren just yet. I think he can turn things around, and like that was one of our, you know, binkies kind of coming into the season. It would be nice to see him succeed here and take over that role, because I don't, Lucas Sims is just, he can't stay off the injured list, so I'm not really sure what to expect from him anymore.
Yeah, it's gonna be, you know, it's a tough one to read. I hope we can get somebody out of this. I do agree with you. Alexis Diaz has been pretty impressive. He's kind of been a name as you watch and it's like, oh, here's something. But you know, it's Cincinnati, and if it gets to a committee, it could get to the point where we're talking about Arizona. Like, is anybody really from there worth monitoring? I guess that's one of my things I'm watching for, too, is how much longer of a leash does Mark Melanson have? And I mention it because I know how Arizona isn't supposed to be that great, but they keep finding ways to get save opportunities. It seems like every time I flip on a Diamondback game, Mark Melanson's blowing a save. So, for my selfish reasons of having him in a couple NFBC leagues, and also there's clear save opportunities coming in Arizona, I want to see if Ian Kennedy emerges out there and can finally get that job, or if there's somebody else that we haven't been talking about that enters that conversation. Or who knows, maybe they keep riding with Melanson until he really, really loses the job. But that's one, and then I'll also throw out Boston there. You mentioned Hansel Robles finally getting a save again this year. Does anybody else do this? Yes, Boston's been bad. No, we're not going to find out as we're recording this because they're down 13-3 as we're recording this. But who knows? We've seen bigger leads get blown. So who, you know, does Boston, what's the trend out there? I want to keep an eye out there and see what's going on. And we've also mentioned the Cubs. Same thing, Robertson's still on the COVID IL. Where's that looking? I guess I'll toss it over to you as we didn't fully get into that. Has someone emerged from Chicago? I didn't see too much in the past week, but did you see anything differently that I missed?
It looks like Rowan Wick's going to be the guy for now, but again, yeah, it's a tough situation where you don't really know how long that's going to be, and Wick's pitched pretty well this year, but still not someone where I'm jumping out of my seat to go grab anytime soon. I'd rather take, I'm looking at Alexis Diaz right now, and he's a 100th percentile fastball spin rate this year. I didn't kind of perked my ears up a little bit. So interesting, a lot of interesting numbers from him. And if it's not going to be Art Warren, and I can't be Hunter Strickland because he's just not, he hasn't pitched well enough to earn the role, I think Diaz might be a really deep sleeper option right now.
So I will wrap up the show with this. As we're recording this, Art Warren did get a save opportunity in Cincinnati against the Cleveland Guardians, and he blew it. They were winning 4-2 in the bottom of the ninth, and he gave up two runs. So, well, maybe your boy Diaz is going to get another Diaz look. He hasn't pitched yet, but if this game goes to extras, maybe he gets his chance to emerge. Maybe he gets a chance to impress manager David Bell. So keep an eye on that. But for all this stuff and more, join on to pitcherlist.com. You will find Rick's closer rankings, the saves plus holds rankings, the reliever article every single day, recapping what we've missed, what we've saw from the night before, all of those reliever trends. So definitely keep an eye on those. Rick, where can they find you on Twitter if they want to ask you directly in terms of reliever questions?
You can find me at I am Rick Graham on Twitter.
Yep, you can find me at Callan underscore Elslager and follow the show at In the Pen Pod. Drop a like, drop us a follow, give us a review on your favorite podcast app or on the Pitcherless Fantasy stream. It's a great way to tell us what we need to improve on and maybe have Rick stop talking about his dang Red Sox for once. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. I am Callan, he is Rick, and we will see you next week where hopefully for Rick's sake, he'll have some more happy stuff to talk about with his Red Sox, but probably not.